Let me check, it's gonna work. This is, what's right here? You can bring your chair, bring your chair here, you see the deeds. Maybe you can move, so running for your chair. Did anybody want to talk to you, see you? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 14 or 15?
15.
Descriptions of the Kingdom of God. Canto 3, Chapter 15. I hope the more devotees would come for the programs in the weekend. We very much need to have much more association we go all through the week without much surcharge association. Our priorities are just we put Krishna second, third, fourth, then he puts us the same way. Description of the Kingdom of God. Yatta
Yatta
Chadya
Chadya
Uman
Uman
Aste
Aste
Bhagavan
Bhagavan
Shabda
Shabda
Gochara
Gochara
Satvam
Satvam
Vistavya
Vistavya
Virayam
Virayam
Swanam
Swanam
No
No
Vidayan
Vidayan
Visha
Visha
Yatra chaya puma aste.
Yatra chaya puma aste.
Bhagavan shabda gochara.
Bhagavan shabda gochara.
Satvam vistabhya vigrayam.
Satvam vistabhya vigrayam.
Swanam no midaya visha.
Swanam no midaya visha.
Yatra chaya puma aste.
Yatra chaya puma aste.
Bhagavan shabda gochara.
Bhagavan shabda gochara.
Satvam vistabhya viragyam.
Satvam vistabhya viragyam.
Swanam no midaya vishaha.
Swanam no midaya vishaha.
Yatra chaya pumam aste.
Yatra chaya pumam aste.
Bhagavan shabda gochara.
Bhagavan shabda gochara.
Satvam vistabhya vigragyam.
Satvam vistabhya vigragyam.
Swanam no midaya vishaha.
Swanam no midaya.
Yatra chadya puma aste.
Yatra chadya puma aste.
Bhagavan sabda gocharam.
Bhagavan sabda gocharam.
Satvam vistabhya virajam.
Satvam vistabhya virajam.
Swanam nu midayam visaham.
Swanam no midayam visaham.
Yatra chadya pumanaste.
Yatra chadya pumanaste.
Bhagavan sabda gochara.
Bhagavan sabda gochara.
Satvam vistavya virajam.
Satvam vistavya virajam.
Swanam no midayam vishah.
Swanam no midayam vishah.
Yatra katya pumanaste.
Yatra katya pumanaste.
Bhagavan sabda go hare.
Bhagavan sabda go chare.
Satvam vishva viram.
Satvam vishva virajam.
Sudvam mira.
Cha. End. Adya.
Adya.
Original.
Original.
Puman.
Puman.
Persons.
Persons.
Aste.
Aste.
It's there.
It's there.
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Shabda Gochara.
Shabda Gochara.
Understood through the Vedic literature.
Understood through the Vedic literature.
Sattvam.
Sattvam.
The mode of goodness.
The mode of goodness.
Vishtavya.
Vishtavya.
Accepting.
Accepting.
Virajam.
Virajam.
Uncontaminated.
Uncontaminated.
Swanam.
Swanam.
Of his own associates.
Of his own associates.
Na.
Na.
Us.
Us.
Midayan.
Midayan.
Increasing happiness.
Increasing happiness.
Visha.
Visha.
Personification of religious principles.
Personification of religious principles.
Translation. In the Vaikuntha planets, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original person and who can be understood through the Vedic literature. He is full of uncontaminated mode of goodness, no place for passion or ignorance. He contributes religious process for the devotees. Repeat after me. In the Vaikuntha planets.
In the Vaikuntha planets.
Is the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Is the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Who is the original person.
Who is the original person.
And who can be understood.
And who can be understood.
Through the Vedic literature.
Through the Vedic literature.
He is full of, he is full of the uncontaminated mode of goodness.
He is full of the uncontaminated mode of goodness.
No place for passion or ignorance.
No place for passion or ignorance.
He contributes religious process for the devotees.
He contributes religious process for the devotees.
Sri Prabhupada's purport. The kingdom of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the spiritual sky cannot be understood by any process other than hearing from the description of the Vedas. No one can go see it. This material world also, one is unable to pay to go to a far distance place by motorized conveyances. Can only understand about the place from authentic books. Similarly, the Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual sky are beyond this material sky. The modern scientists who are trying to travel in space are having difficulty going over to the nearest planet, the moon, to say nothing of the highest planets within the universe. There's no possibility they can go beyond the material sky, enter the spiritual sky, and see for themselves the spiritual planets. Vaikuntha, therefore the kingdom of God in the spiritual sky can be understood only through the authentic descriptions of Vedas and Puranas. In the material world, there are three modes of material qualities. What are those modes?
Goodness, passion, and ignorance.
Right. But in the spiritual world, there is no trace of the modes of passion and ignorance. It's only the mode of goodness, which is uncontaminated by any tinge of ignorance or passion. In the material world, even if a person is completely in goodness, he is sometimes subject to the polluted to be polluted by a tinge of the modes of ignorance and passion. But in the Vaikuntha world, the spiritual sky, only the mode of goodness in its pure form exists. Lord, his devotees reside in Vaikuntha planets. They have the same transcendental qualities, namely Sudha Sattva, which is the mode of pure goodness. The Vaikuntha planets are very dear to the Vaishnavas, and for the progressive march of the Vaishnavas toward the kingdom of God, the Lord himself helps his devotees. Krishna says like that also. He says, Tesham Satatayuktana, Vajatam Priti Purvakam, Dami Puri Yogan, tam yena malpayantute. So those who worship me with the devotion, dedication, because I get the knowledge how they can come unto me. Because one who has explicit faith in scripture and guru, it says such person, they will obtain all achievements that are possible in the spiritual dimension. But Prabhupada mentions here that you can't go as a tourist. You can't even actually, like many times people go to Vrindavan, and they go as a tourist. They go around without any devotional reference. They will not see anything. They will see some buildings, they will see some samadhis, they will see something. They won't really see anything. They won't realize anything. But as they go in devotional consciousness, after having prepared themselves devotionally from wherever they came from, then they will see and they will hear. Or will have great sense of exhilaration and realizations, revelations. And as one sometimes brings books and tries to reflect very deeply on what has taken place in the environment, then such visitations will have a lot of, one will experience great benefit from such. It will not be just like going to a museum, you're looking at something, going to the cinema, you're looking, and then after you look, you're gone. The idea is you're just getting some sensual stimulation from the environment. But people often go to such places like that. And they're thinking that Krishna is so cheap, or the spiritual dharmas are so cheap. But they unfold according to consciousness. Not only does that happen in the spiritual dharmas, but every aspect of spiritual life unfolds according to consciousness. Everything is packaged. And like you have a package, you have to open it up and take off the paper and the string and the ribbon, and then you open the box and there's something inside. Every aspect of spiritual life is actually in the package. And according to the quality of our devotion, how far we get inside. Many times we just have the package and we're just looking from the outside, trying to hope to look in, but we won't really be able to have inward consciousness. So in all of our activities, we must try to somehow access the inner meaning. Every single thing that we do has inner meaning. Otherwise, you know, we become mechanical. Another RT, another dressing. By the way, nobody's dressed today, so nice. I was a little slow on my dressing duties, so I didn't come down in time to greet them. Red is a very festive dress, festive mood. I guess in the true world, red means passion, huh? Everything is reflected in the material world, coming from the spiritual. So, passion. But in the spiritual environments, that not the mode of passion, but it's such a expression of love. People put on red. They are into their emotions, passion, fiery, etc. So, but we notice this verse emphasizes that there's no passion in the spiritual world. Absent of the mode of ignorance, absent of the mode of passion. There is enthusiasm, there is anxiety, there is adventure. There is no self-centered anger or passion, etc. So, someone who is covered by the mode of ignorance and passion, they obviously will not be able to see or get inside because their own passion and ignorance will cover. Take like thing and connect with like thing. So therefore that passion, so that we explain about the modes. The modes are the gunas, or the ropes. They are the ropes that binds us, ropes that interfere with our acceleration. So they're the chains, they're the ropes. Like they're the curtains, they're the bars, they're the barriers. So, where there is so much mode of ignorance, mode of passion, we'll be able to go inside. It says when we see the deities, we chant our rounds, we read, should always be reminding ourselves there is great inner mystery, secrets, and experiences. And we should be not selfish, but there should be some greed to want to really open up the box and see what is the great gifts and jewels that are there. So in our activities, we must first be careful to be focusing more and more in how we can serve Guru and Krishna. And as we were saying today, so many devotees are not here. And so there's so many reasons, obviously. But there's always reasons for everything, no matter how we do our priorities. Sometimes there's emergencies. There's always reasons. But according to how we organize our priorities, then things happen. And then things take place. So, when we're not hungry for the inner connections, we get so distracted by whatever little personality conflicts happen. We're distracted by whatever sociological things is going on. And that becomes our whole meditation. We're not making inner connections. We become bored and we start thinking of other external activities of sense gratification. We're not connecting with, we're not looking for the inner connection. We begin to feel that maybe devotional service doesn't really even have any higher taste. Because we're only tasting just the most basic. Because of the modes that we are bringing to discover, to those modes that interfere. So we read so many things in all the scriptures. We should know that these are not just lusts. We have so many unusual situations about our process. Even as we are singing these songs to the deities, we're singing to Tulsi. But we're not just engaged in some ritual for the sake of it. We're not some sort of, you know, ritual fanatics. But we are concerned about how to dive deeper for more nourishment, etc. So, one cannot just go to the spiritual world unless one is certified, nor can one even go to the spiritual environment within the material world and have much experience, or nor can one even come into the temple or chant the names of God without having certain qualifications to get proper benefit of that. Notice also when you're too much in the mode of passion and ignorance, you even lose the desire to chant, or you find your chanting is so, becomes so lethargic, so mechanical. You fit it in this time, you fit it in that time. You rush through it while you're ready to do what you really want to do. You just rush through it, you tolerate it. You tolerate this whole chanting thing. It's tolerable somewhat, sometimes not so tolerable. Then you do what you really want to do. Based on sense gratification or whatever. And then in the process, of course, we stay in the modes, and the modes keep us at a distance. As you know, when I'm in America, I try to take more advantage of keeping up on the international patterns and the patterns, especially in America, which also much of the world. And so, if you look at the news things, news programs, 60 Minutes, 48 Hours, 2020. He's always talking about some of the trends. And nowadays, more and more as we discuss, now he's talking about the big lies that's going on, the big problems. So last night there was discussion about the phenomena of anger that's being experienced now in America. And like, very very serious. The anger that children have for their parents. You were talking about a voting campaign, so I was getting a letter from Doc Sheen, and she was telling me how her little son, you know, beats her, or tries to beat her and kick her, and then he kicked her in the head. I couldn't believe this. Even the children are so angry. They jump on each other in the classrooms and so many things. But of course, that is all due to the environment. So, one of the great phenomena now that's happening all over the country is people are literally killing each other on the road. Not just from accidents, but from being in so much anxiety about what's happening at work, what's happening in their family, what's happening in their life, that just by the slightest things, somebody cuts someone off, someone passes someone up, someone lets somebody pass. And all over the country now, people are shooting each other, are beating each other. You hear that, Rocky?
Yes, sir.
It's amazing. That, and what has to be, the devotees have to be a little careful also. When you're driving your cars, you know, there's so many people who are in so much anxiety, so much lust, and so much greed, and the slightest thing can just, you know, make them snap. They get case after case of somebody who's pulling up at someone who passes them by, they get to the light, they jump out, they start beating them with a crowbar, and they start shooting them. Or somebody, you know, speeds, and they're feeling the other person not going fast enough. And then they come by and they make a finger at them. And the person just, you know, catches up with them and just starts shooting at the car. Because so many people first have guns. It's the most dangerous here in America. So many people. So many people drive with guns under their car. They drive with guns on them. So many. And devotees used to do sankirtan in Atlanta on the streets and things. They'd be shocked about how many people, when you come up to the car, that they grip with their gun. So many. Because they're just so much in anxiety, so much fearful, so much not trusting anybody because they don't trust themselves. And therefore, so dangerous in many ways. So, this passion, motive passion, becoming so dominant. And they're having now, they're trying to have so much therapy to help people to know how to control their passions. Because some of the folks, they have like a disease and they can go over the edge so easy. And the car phenomena brings out the tendency in those people even more. Because in the car phenomena, you know, the tendency is that you're there and you're driving a big hunk of steel. And you have a sense of power. You feel a sense of artificial shelter and protection, like you're in a tank. So some people who have that passion, who would normally protect themselves a little more, the kind of artificialness that's created by being in control of the steel, being able to press down, exert his power, and honk on the horn. And then, you know, for the same one, there is, you know, congestion. So they've seen how people who are in traffic jams are even more in anxiety than people who are just, say, queued up in a line or something, waiting. There's a certain anxiety about that. But then in the car, gives you a certain sense of more tension and more sense of power. And so, they were just having so many cases. Some people are reporting what happened to them. Somebody shoots them out the window. Somebody, you know, shoots, you know, two rounds in the car and kills their wife, kills their children. In some cases, they just pull out the driveway. The person didn't see them coming. And they get disturbed, they almost hit them. They get disturbed. And then they just start shooting. So, Kali Yuga is really advancing. You don't have to be in environments where people are sinful. You don't have to be in environments where there is drugs, intoxications, and violence. But just by just moving about and doing anything, there's so much risk so much danger. The number of young kids and people who just been walking the streets were getting shot in Washington. They happened to be in the environment of crossfire. Like something you would think about in the Wild West or something, where somebody innocently gets shot by somebody else firing at someone else. But these kind of things are tremendously increasing. And you get people who, of course, will find themselves at a loss because of such. And sometimes people will consider, well, it's just only certain environments. Some environments are more concentrated with ignorance, and so there may be more tendency to that. But there's no safety. You can move out to Beverly Hills, you can move to all kind of environments, and there's still so much of the same. Because everyone is still having passion, still affected by the ignorance, and still having weapons, and having this greed and such. So, controlling anger is very significant, and controlling ignorance, laziness, apatheticness, sensitivity. Because without such control, as this verse is saying, there's no question of seeing Vaikuntha, or no question of entering to deeper levels of consciousness. When you're carrying anger around all the time, it puts you in a certain level. Even our devotees have to be careful. Sometimes our devotees, they ask to do something, they get angry. If something is brought up about their service, they get angry. They just say, why don't you leave me alone? Why are you bothering me? Get off my back. Even if we have to address somebody about being insensitive, just address them straightforward. We don't have to carry an angry attitude with them. Because the idea is that we want to help someone in their service, and we want to be helped in our service. So it's everybody's duty to be personal, not to hide issues, but to see what they can do themselves that can help the preaching. So if there's some things that are not so wonderful, or someone imposing on you, or somebody's not interacting with you right, speak with them. If you can't speak with them directly, then speak with another devotee, or speak in the community building, or speak in, or write letters, to find some way to communicate, but not with anger. When we are angry, we should really know that we are wrong. To what degree the other person may also be wrong, we should also know that we're wrong. Because what is it to be angry about if there is some cry for love, some cry? Because every activity is either giving love or a cry for love or need for love. So, arrangement for the love. So what is the idea of being angry? We can feel some incoherence that just don't seem right, or feel disturbed. We want to see something higher. But then that doesn't bring any anger, the ignorance, the passion. But the degree that the anger and passion comes up, then we should realize, oh, this is causing me not to be able to enter deeper into the treasures. This is the gunas, the ropes that I'm dealing with now that I can see that is what's holding me back somebody in my devotional life. Because the Bhagavad Gita explains how, if you contemplate the object of senses, it produces attachment. And that attachment produces anger, because we don't get satisfied with what we expect. And then from that anger produces the illusions. We get then, out of station about what the reality and what is proper. So then from the illusion, then it builds up, then there's fall down, deviation after deviation. So be careful, because it becomes such a disease. Because people are not satisfied, they're contemplating the environments, and the anger is increasing. The individuals are so much disturbed because so many things are not going on in their life proper, and he wanted to take it out on somebody. And so, and they find a way to take it out. And then this kind of macho-ness, whether it's done by women or by men, it's very disturbing to the entire planet. Because it keeps the planet, keep people more and more distracted from being able to heal. We all want to be devotees of a caliber that's constantly trying to see how to heal ourselves and to heal others. We're all sick in these bodies, in this planet. So we want to see, okay, how to get the medication fast. Another part of this same discussion, the program, was showing how, also through anger, there's three aspects, all dealing with, touching upon different things, but I was coordinating them all with emotions. So now they're beginning to reassess intelligence, IQ, and to the point that they can evaluate now a lot clearer what will be a successful child and what will not be. And they're seeing that they've been wrong about thinking that it's only about intelligence. Because they're seeing that even more important than intellectual intelligence is emotional intelligence. And so many cases where they've studied now, children were very small, into the, let me see, adulthood. And they see that those who have emotional stability have much greater chance for success than those who have intellectual intelligence. Because those who have intellectual intelligence who are not able to work with people, who get angry, who get disturbed, who have short tempers, they're the ones who get pregnant first, out of wedlock. They're the ones who commit crimes. They're the ones who have more trouble on jobs because they don't have tolerance, they don't have patience, they're acting by passion. Or they're selfish, or etc. Even though they have high intelligence, they don't have the framework sufficient of how to use it. And so they find that if they follow the lives of such kids, they're seeing who is successful and who's not. Because of the ability to cope and to deal with conflicts and situations and to deal with other people, etc. And those who do not have the emotional stability, then they will find many, many times they will marry, they will divorce, they will constantly be changing country, cities, changing jobs, changing professions, so many different things. Because they're not grounded with themselves, so the environment then becomes more and more difficult. So in the training of our own kids also, we have to be careful that we help them very much to excel academically, spiritually, but even with the spiritual knowledge that we give them, that we help them to understand, we keep emphasizing, community, help them to understand they're not just to do whatever they want to do when they want to do. They're not an individual, but they're an individual who's part of a whole. And then they see society that way. Otherwise, we will encourage them later to be failures, because then they will be very stubborn, they'll be very selfish, and they will interact in the world like that, and they will get many, many consequences as adults. So we need to train our children how to be selfless, how to share their toys, how to share things, how to interact in such a way that they're much more mature, unless emotionally mature. Otherwise, we can have very intelligent kids, can be very snobbish or very selfish, and they will not be. They will be failures in many, many ways. Another aspect was the degree, of course, this is becoming more and more common knowledge now, of how many women are actually being battered. Also by cases, and they even have women who are battering men, by cases of so much passion, you know, so much emotion, whatnot. And so, in some cases, it's become like such a thing now that there's, in the medical society, they form groups, or form a national team of plastic surgeons who give free care to women who are battered. So many women have been so disfigured for life by the passion of being battered. He saw the broken noses and fallen jawbones and so on. And then they were telling the stories of how viciously these passions were there. When somebody, you know, they're unhappy about their job, they're unhappy about their life, they're happy in their relationship, so many things, and this anger just builds up. It just explodes, you know, ruthlessly. So these are all obviously things that we can see. Very unfortunate. And we see them in others, we can immediately see, oh, this is terrible. We see in others, we say, this is really ridiculous, this is animalistic. But then when it comes in ourselves, we don't see it in the same way. And now, you know, many people are in jail now for murder because of crimes of passion. But it doesn't just happen by that particular contact that, you know, put them in jail. But it's a build-up. It's a build-up in consciousness. Then there's an explosion. We all know anger can cause hypertension, cause ulcers. You're angry at somebody, you hold grudges. What it does to you, it hurts one's own life, physically, psychologically. And what to say, and see spiritual. So these modes, ignorance, passion, whatnot, we have to really rise above. Ignorance, we're unclean, we're lazy. No serious growth can take place like that spiritually, when there is passion. But look at our own lives and see how much we're going around really angry at somebody. When you're angry at Vaishnava, it's many times worse, because Vaishnava is a carrier of the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Even if they're the most neophyte, then that anger becomes even greater offense and disturbance in the spiritual life. You can be concerned, you can be disturbed, you can feel some obvious need to see difference and to play our part in trying to rectify. But once we start becoming angry, and where it becomes so much seeds that begin to grow. And then we do find ourselves, we must be careful to see that the disturbance is with the act and not the person. Be disturbed by somebody doing something and you realize that that's below them. So you have some compassion for them, that they're doing something below them. And you're not happy with it. It's not an artificial thing, you're not happy with it. But when it comes to a point of ignorance, anger, then we start no longer looking at each other as Vaishnava. And become resorted to the animalistic platform. Hare Krishna.
To teach the inductees about ethics and morals and teamwork. And their comments were that they're finding the kids that come into the services now don't know anything about how to work with other people, how to put other people first, or even how to, think in an honest kind of way. And it's showing up in the services like the Naval Academy. Another article was talking about how during the day the cadets give the appearance of righteousness, go to their classes, but at night they live a whole different kind of life. They're peddling drugs, prostitution, enormous rings of cheating in order to get through.
There's
two lives.
Yeah, no aspects of society. Kumari, you were saying to me about the school.
Yes, we wanted to say that, you know, I worked in a school where 100 students were offered $9 million in scholarship money. But at the same time, they're very academically bright, but there are a lot of things that are ethically not correct because of the competition for academic recognition, and they don't see themselves as having any more worth. So we've been given the opportunity to go this Monday and talk to the students about ethics because the teachers kept raising that question. And we'll be using Srila Krishnapada's book as a text, the one about leadership and angel consciousness. Because it's so step by step, doesn't tell kids just to be good,
it gives them means, methods. So it was really wonderful that Krishna made that arrangement.
What is your group?
Then Yaman's going to be in the group. Mm-hmm. They're at the incoming class, not the students who've been there before. So he's in the ninth grade this year.
Who's going? I mean, which yourself and who else is going?
Hmm?
Which devotees are going?
As a teacher, she's asked as a teacher to do it, and she's going to do it in the difference of the job. But Aditya's saying also, it's fun. People, they don't know how to take it. Because where are they going to get the ethics from? From home? No. From television? No. From their environment? No. You see all of this. You know, harshness and competitiveness. They're listening to their mothers and fathers and uncles and aunties talking. They're seeing everybody's fruit and to see duplicity. And you tell the child, you know, to be honest. You're seeing you're lying to everybody. You're lying to the milkman. You're lying to the insurance man. You're cheating this person, cheating this person. You're cheating your own uncle and niece, you know, you're cheating your own relatives, taking things from them, avoiding them. You're telling the kids, you know, be honest. You're thinking, for what? What is that? You know what it means. Your consideration honestly means not to get caught. Because they see people who are talking about honesty. And they see their main concern is to do what they have to. And somehow don't get caught. Anyone else? Because of what you said, because of anger, because of not understanding about Krishna, not understanding about karma, that what they do is going to come back to them. And because of greed, they're thinking about the moment, they act on it. And so then they hurt people sometimes. And then they kill.
So as devotees, you were saying something very, very profound, which, of course, everybody seems, you know, that we all seem not to bother about it. Seems we may talk to outsiders, and we look, you know, very, you know, nice to them, but when it comes to dealing with each other, you know, it's sometimes we feel we're very vicious. We don't have compassion for each other, and sometimes you look at it and you say, what's happening? You know, I've seen this, you know, many times, and I've even in everything. And why is it so? Why is it that we're trying as much as possible to, you know, give compassion of Lord Chaitanya, the Guru, to others, but if it comes to dealing with each other, we don't tolerate each other, we don't have compassion, we don't do any of these things that, you know, will take us ahead to the other experience.
The reason there's so much of that, just due to what we're talking about now, like the kids who we're talking about who are going into the Navy and the different occupations, they don't realize how much they have been programmed by their environment and lifestyle and thinking differently. So we read philosophy, and we read about all these things, but we also, from time to time, don't realize how much we're also products of the material environment. And so when one doesn't think that an issue is for themselves as well, then the tendency is that we see that it's everybody else's problem. Or we feel that it's not a problem, and it is a problem. So in order to become more compassionate, one has to realize that I'm not really very compassionate. But I'm thinking that I'm already compassionate and I want to be more compassionate, then it's not quite the same. Most devotees are thinking, I'm a compassionate person, but I want to be more compassionate. They're not thinking that I'm really not so compassionate. Therefore, I need to be compassionate. You see, people thinking, you know, I'm a saintly person. Because after all, I wear saintly dress, I do saintly things, you know, I read saintly books, and I'm a saintly person. And so many people are not saintly people because they don't read saintly books, and they don't know higher truth, but I'm a saintly person. And because of that, one thinking that they're already saintly, then they won't go, as we said earlier, going deep enough to look at this. I said because we don't, because we're thinking that we're already saintly. We're thinking that we're pretty compassionate. Then we won't go deep enough to see how many cases you know that we're not really compassionate, or how many times we're very insensitive, or how many times we show compassion, but only when it's when it's convenient. There's a big sense like that we show compassion. We do it when it's convenient. Which means...
Is that still compassion?
No, not really. I mean, it's some reflection of it. It's not. You know, it's not mature. See, you know, mature world is hell. It's very hellish of the way it programs people to talk, to think, and to act. And... yesterday I took about a 2.5 hour walk. I walked all the way up to the post office, and I walked back. A little difficult because there's no sidewalk here. Because it was in the afternoon, late morning, or I guess afternoon, 10 o'clock or something, wasn't so much traffic. And in most cases, you know, people got houses, and a lot of people got, some people got cows, some people got horses in the area. And I was just walking, I finished my rounds, and I was thinking. I was having back problems all the last few days, and waking up in the night, and my whole schedule and metabolism was thrown off. So, then I was just thinking, because my mind was, peaceful by just kind of looking at the horses and the cows and things. And I was just seeing how normally individuals are having to grab on so many things in their mind and intelligence, by their jobs, by the problems they deal with, by the people they interact with. And it's just constant, constant, constant. And the tendency is that we take on these things and we don't do sufficient cleansing. We do chant our rounds, we don't chant with intensity to cleanse ourselves. We do read, we don't read attentively. We do have chance to see the deities. We don't pray attentively. We do have chance to sing some songs. We don't really think deeply about, what is the meaning of this, what am I actually saying? And make it a real, deep offering. And because of that, then, we also will stay at a certain level carrying so much of what we're, picking up. And then we'll drop that on each other. You have to practically see the material associations is like going into, a place where there is infectious diseases. And although by circumstance you have to go to those places, but at the same time you're realizing this is very, very dangerous and very contaminated. So because you know that the infectious diseases are there, you're constantly trying to be careful to minimize the contact. And after you come out of such camps, come out of such place, you take some antibiotics, or you do something to build up your immune system, knowing that there's likelihood that you get some touch of some of the stuff that you don't want to come down with. Otherwise, you take in some. Any other question?
I was just, reflecting on how much anger that people come in contact with. People come in contact with in their day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was just thinking about the other day, I had to talk to a lawyer about something, and she was very angry and was shouting, and then, I went to the store and bought the book, and the store, the cashier was angry, and, people, I'm sure, Lila mentions this all the time, just in your day-to-day life, getting on the bus, walking down the street, you run into so much anger, that it's incredible.
And the bigger the cities, I mean, you know, when you're in New York, you really realize it more. You know, some people, they go to the subway every day, and they're all crowded in, they're all bumped up against each other. Somebody's smelling, somebody's making noise at the newspaper, somebody's pushing you out the way, you know? And you just get so much disturbed. And then there's, you know, heavy traffic. We saw when we were there a couple of weeks ago, we're just commuting, you know, from Dayananda's house, 22nd Avenue. It would just take so long during rush hour. Just sitting there and sitting and sitting and sitting. There's all these cars everywhere, you know, the whole place is full of cars and all kind of pollution, you know. It's hot. People looking at each other and thinking, you know, why are you looking at me? Get out of my way. People are honking as if you're supposed to take your car and just fly over. You're honking at somebody else. You get 20 cars honking. And nobody's moving. Everybody's angry. And then they get up and somebody, you know, had a flat. And they point at him. Get out of the way. Then some people, you know, they go over the top. They'll be so disturbed. They get out and shoot the guy who's trying to fix his tire. Why are you holding up traffic? You know, there he has a bad tire, a bad car, and now he's shot. You know, be very careful. To be very careful, and as you say, sometimes being spiritual is not just being spiritual, now it's also for survival. Because, you know, if you're not having some spiritual groundedness, then you also will do something to, you know, touch somebody's button. If somebody passes you and you get angry and you give them the finger or something, they got guns.
How do you balance with, you know, we're supposed to be, you know, looking for Krishna in everyone, and everything is Krishna's energy, but yet still, you know, be aware that, you know, different situations that you run into or that you have contact with are not good for your spiritual development. You know, how can you sort of, you know, because you have, if you're in the material world, you're having interactions with different kinds of people, and, you know, you don't want to, you know, be paranoid, but yet still you have an understanding of, you know, the different modes and what's happening, and, you know, all the negative energy that's there. So, you know.
I realize that everything is Krishna's energy, but what aspect of his energy?
Mm-hmm.
Maya is also Krishna's energy, as an energy and as a personified consideration, but it's not the energy that we want to associate with. Well, we see that everybody is a devotee of Krishna, in the same principle. But then some entities are not accepting it, not realizing it, and therefore they are temporarily crazy. So you're dealing with somebody who's crazy, you may have some appreciation, affection for them as a person. And you realize that craziness can do all kinds of destructive things. And so, therefore, you're careful about how you deal with the person.
Shri Krishna, but since coming to America, I'm noticing something very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, despite the fact, you know, with all the hype, everything about America being extremely rich and everything,
mm-hmm.
I'm noticing that if you want to be a spiritualist and everything, you come here, it's very devastating in the sense that it's like you are perpetually in debt in America, perpetually. Bills keep coming every day and you don't know where to actually, and you can see the anger is nothing but people trying to work, pay all their bills, pay all their, and you go back home, you find more bills. You go everywhere you go, it's like bills, and those who are driving the best cars, they are like having bills up to their neck, and you may think they are rich. But if you go to other countries, if you don't have the money, you don't get a car. In Africa, if you don't have your $40,000, you don't get a car. So, you know, you don't actually go in and buy a car, and you know you can't pay for it. and now you're struggling to pay for it, and knowing that any time the car, they will come for the car. So you see, these things, you know, it's a wonderful society, but something is really, really wrong.
Yes. Notice how every place in the world has like different types of benefits, so to speak, and different types of problems. Like, take an example. So in the West here, you could have more commodities. You can even buy things now, and you can pay a year and sometimes 2 years. I mean, I saw the last time I was watching that program, and they came up with something that says, you don't pay, not now, not next year, you pay in 1998. And I think it was a car. Somebody was advertising, you can take it now. And you pay in 1999. Amazing. Person would be dead then, or the idea is that you just buy it and enjoy it. Then later you don't have to suffer, you have to cover it for you. Somebody might have to cover it for you, you know. But the idea is that take it, you know. As Adam Smith emphasized, capitalism is successful the more you get people to want things that they don't need. Mm-hmm. This is the basic thing. So you get them the more you can want, they keep wanting, they keep buying, going for, and then the supply will be increased, and because demand will always be growing. You know? But then you see the other side. And it's always kind of amazing to me. You see, like in India, you see in Africa, where people that don't have that kind of opportunity, that there is such a meditation on it. And then the person who has it becomes cocky, and the ones who don't, they feel such a demarcation. Like a person who has a car in the third world, or has a big house, they are so much of a different class than those who don't. And so what it does then, it makes those who don't so envious, so angry, and ready to give anything to be able to get that. So you have what we have in much of the world. You don't have so much of a middle class. You have those who have all these things, and then you have a lot of people who just working day to day, who don't. But those working day to day, some of their biggest desires, somehow might also have a car. We're going to have a big house, and then we're going to enjoy. And then people go to all means, all kinds of means. So there is death in the family, the relatives, you know, fight each other because, you know, assets are very important. Or people find more ways to try to see how to, you know, to dupe, because to get assets becomes, you know, very, very important. So it's like whatever in situation, the mature energy frustrates you. It's very frustrating, you know, for somebody who goes life, who goes day after day after day, and they're feeling, and they're watching somebody who has things, and they don't have. I mean, there's one in that neighborhood. We've got a couple areas in Java Walk. So there's an estate. Once you go down past the doctor who has this house with horses, you make a left, and the next place there's an estate. And so I was with, who was it? Maybe Anta, we went for Java Walk. Had the visitor from Vrindavan, going to the social welfare conference, Jai Shiva. So we went Java Walk, we went walking. And a beautiful mansion. I mean, you know, a whole area, you know, about 1,500 houses. And an amazing estate. It's beautiful mansion. And so many beautiful cars, beautiful mansion. I was thinking how karma is so unusual. Because somebody's living in, you know, about $1 million or an $800,000 house, $1 million, because they have so much property also. And then somebody is struggling, you know, in a little apartment where they can barely, you know, they can barely pay pay the rent each month, you know. Someone else is getting, you know, a place where they get 15 acres of land, and they have, you know, 15, 20 room place, and, you know, beautiful ponds and things around the house, and manicured gardens and everything, grass. And so, when there's even less chance of a person being able to acquire that, then there's even more and more anger, disturbance, and even more crime. And you see like that, that even now in America, because of drugs, is also increasing. But you leave and you go to other countries, and you see the rich always have burglar bars, the upper middle class burglar bars. And 98% of people have to have security. You know, you don't see it so much. People have security, have a security guard living on the property because of the material situation. So it is frustrating, different levels of frustration, how much your energy frustrates you. On the other side of that is you see the frustrations that the rich and super rich go through. And it's even worse. It's even worse. The frustrations that people go through have so much money, we're trying to see about what investments to make. Sometimes you see some people who are quite endowed, and they have these telephones. I saw the other day when I was going to, I was in Denver. There was one guy, and he was just so much all nuts. He was just looking at his phone, looking at something else he had that was telling him something about the stocks. And he was, you know, rushing back to the telephone. He was saying, "No, I think we better play off on that one. We better make a change real quick." And he would go and sit down. And he would go back again. He was, and he practically missed his plane. I mean, he was all nerves, you know. He couldn't, it's like he had answers. He just couldn't sit down, you know. I was looking at him. If he wasn't dressed so nicely, you would have thought he was a man. He was just talking to himself, you know. and that guy was obviously a big willer and diller, you know. And he was like in such anxiety that if he wasn't dressed nice, you would have thought he's a madman. He's talking to himself, running back and forth. He was oblivious to the whole environment. And his mind was just about the money. I was thinking, what the hell is life in this? And he got ready to get in line. He was the last to get in line. He got in line 3 or 4 times. And then he went back to the phone, you know. And finally, you know, he ran on the plane. And he ran looking like a madman. He had his stuff, and his coat is all up, and his tie is flying.
As you were speaking about the modes, I've been monitoring more, you know, what modes that I'm really influenced by. And I'm really seeing, you know, how I'm trying to come out of this mode of ignorance. And recently as yesterday when I spoke to you, and I apologize for wasting your time because I know I'm also wasting Krishna's time and ultimately my time, and how it could have appeared to be such a small thing. You know, it was I had phoned Srila Krishnapada and asked him could I clean his room on yesterday, but then I really sort of procrastinated about coming. And he had taken his job for walking, gotten back, and I was just getting there, so it meant that I needed to inconvenience him to clean his room. And he mentioned something to me about it, and I could have taken it as something being in passing. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought about, you know, how I'm in, you know, really influenced by the mode of ignorance, and it was just my willfulness and my procrastination that didn't allow me to take that serious enough to act on it and to move on it right then. And how that carries over into every other aspect of my life, you know, if it's not checked. So I was thanking you for actually, you know, putting me in check about that thing that may have appeared to be so small. And as you were speaking, I was thinking about how us as devotees are really, really heavy controllers, you know, and how that also perpetuates a lot of anger when, you know, things don't particularly go our way. And if you have, you know, 30 people who want, you know, things exactly how they want them to go, you know, you have a lot of energy going into, you know, trying to manipulate and negotiate things a lot of times. And I think about sometimes how when we take instruction from you, when you give us an instruction, we don't assess it, we don't analyze it, we don't tell you how it should be done this way, that way. We simply, you know, do it. And how wonderful it would be if we could take instructions from each other that way. You know, if when we come, you know, when we have a thing or we're working on a particular thing and we need some assistance, some service in doing that thing, that we don't have to expend a lot of time and energy on with the devotee on, you know, how it should be done and the way it should be done. And not that we can't, you know, have input and maybe suggestions and recommendations, but not being so attached to those suggestions and recommendations. And so I've been looking at myself, too, because I'm one of those controllers, on how I can and become of more service and, you know, just move out of the way of what someone else is trying to do and really know what it means to serve and to assist and to support others, even if my vision may be different, even if, you know, I would have done it differently. Just knowing how to be of service to them by trying to transfer my service to you onto the devotees, my service attitude. So
all that goes along with what all you're saying is that when there's compassion, when someone feels that you care and you're thinking about their best interest, then it has less and less difficulty in being able to follow through sometimes on something. But when there's some question whether or not it may be in the best interest, or when there's question that many things in the environment are not always in their best interest, then it brings certain fears and paranoia. It becomes more difficult. But if there's more trust and more support of each other, then there's more of a consciousness of distribution of labor when there is a need for different things, and the devotees will kind of come more to each other's call, in a sense. Hopefully that will gradually start developing more, because there's more genuine teamship and care.
Just on that point, I have another question, but this brings up a point of, I think we've said the focus has to be the service we're doing is for Guru and Krishna. What sometimes I find if I ask somebody to do something often, you know, I get that, and my response, it's not me, right? You know, it's a service. So doesn't it need a consciousness, a firm consciousness that whatever service we're doing, because this is bhakti yoga service, it's for Guru and Krishna, and it may need some austerity or, you know, in order to get it done. And if we're conscious of that, then when that mold begins to rise, we can be alert to it.
It's easier said than done. The difficulty is that most of the devotees have full-time jobs. So not only is it a full-time job, but every environment then dictates a certain mindset. And see, when you, and maybe this will help the devotees see what's happening to themselves, is that when you are in your workplace, then your mind is functioning, you're dealing with a certain level of force field, and then when you come for your devotion, you have to kind of get out of that, get focused again, and then get into what you have to do, or you have to, you know, get ready for that. And it's actually, I mean, this in no way is to justify it, because the devotees should become more clever how to make these shifts. But it kind of helps identify it. And some of the devotees' jobs are much more demanding in terms of the modes that they have to deal with. And so it's like they're walking right out of one world into another world. And because they're not actually so happy in their in the material world, they're tolerated. So then, when they get out of that, so much of their consciousness wants to just to kind of be away or kind of chill out. So much of their consciousness wants to not to have to carry what they're carrying from work. And so there are times when we carry more than what we realize. And then what happens is that we're a little dull at first about the idea of service. Or we kind of feel, well, where's my time? I just finished so much time, 8 hours, 9 hours, doing, you know, somebody else's time. And now, where's my time? Because I have to go back to that other stuff, the other time. And then in between that, the devotion and the attitude of bhakti, it's a little hard sometimes for the devotees to jump back into it. So how do we deal with that? Again, we have to have a sandwich, you know, and that we have to realize how devastating those environments are, And then we see that even though we're having to be so much a part of that, that before we go to work, we have some time to hear some tape on the way, we read something, we have a few quality rounds that we do, we can't finish all our rounds. And while we're there in the workplace, we learn more and more how to keep psychological space with the people that we deal with. Not that we should be impersonal to, or rude, but we should keep psychological space. And knowing the more we really plug into their consciousness, the harder it is going to be for us to, you know, to balance and to make adjustments. So a lot of bodies haven't learned that yet. When they go to work, they get so much into talking and thinking like the people that they're working around. And then you feel heavy and you don't know why. You know, because you're just like connected right into, you know, their existence.
I have questions. One related to what you just said, because I have a kind of a real conflict, because since I got my PhD and I've just been able to kind of, you know, have that pressure off, and I realized that actually it was very good training in a sense, because I'm very focused on, and I'm much more competent, and I view my job as like a service. And so actually I really like my job. It's kind of, there's interference from people, which I find disturbing, but what I do, I like, and I try to do it for Krishna, but I always have a feeling what I'm doing is less valued than if I were able to do, like, devotional service full-time. And so it kind of, because I feel like, for me, you know, Krishna kind of gave me this talent, and so I guess my struggle is to try and use it more for Krishna, you know.
Good point. See, because we're all so different, you know, we have to look at it as like a real, you know, city or community within it. I mean, as a community, I mean, that's the word. Is that we talk about varnashram dharma, we talk about different services, different occupations, different professions, different varnas, different ashrams. And that means that there are bona fide services, moods. Someone is more Brahman oriented, somebody is more this, like that, Vaishya, etc. It's out there. And we want to honor that, because the idea is that we're not coming together as a family to lose our identity. We're coming together as a spiritual family to be able to refine our identity, our real spiritual identity, and to have a real sense of unity with diversity, or a real sense of variegatedness based on a spiritual nucleus. So, as the devotee is doing their work and being asked to do something, they should consider, oh yes, they want to play a part in being able to have more direct assistance in some areas. But then there's those who are also asking. We also have to be a little bit more sensitive to the fact that, yes, someone has this kind of job, someone is having to do, you know, is only away from the job on these days, this day is more likely, let me try to see how to give them some service they can do on that day. I mean, we just have to be a little more sensitive toward each other, and when that happens, then a lot of things kind of fall in place a little more. Now, one of the problems we have is that there are still some devotees who really won't do anything that's not easy for them to fit into their schedule. And that part is important. Because then it puts too much weight on some of the others, or it causes too much deadline kind of stuff. And all of a sudden you start rushing to do this and rushing to do that, and you know, we got to plan ahead. That's most important. We have to have more vision so that we can do things more organized, professional, you know, more systematic. So that's first. Many things we have a lot of difficulty with because we have to patch up, we have to cover in that way, which could be avoided if we're smooth. The other thing is that some of those who have that kind of mentality, and less you have it, that they will actually only do when it's kind of convenient for them to fit in. Then it kind of blows some others out, or if somebody does do something, then they get a little timid because they realize if I accept to do something, they're going to give me more and more and more and more. So I better kind of let them know right now. I'll do this one. You know, we have to be careful that too, because that can happen. Somebody start doing something, we just call everything on that person. Boom, 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 you know. And then they're inwardly having disturbance, or later they kind of feel, well, I'm not going to bother you again next time, because I wasn't expecting all this. But if we're seeing that we have a responsibility to cover the weight, and we've been asked to do both things, do the material situation competently, so you don't get fired or you don't get too much in anxiety any more than necessary, and at the same time realize that you are a spiritual being who is occupying some spirit, you know, some material space. So, you know, so you got to deal with your material situation. You got to, you know, got to cover some bills and things, and that gives you freedom to be able to, you know, do certain services. But so much also, I think some of you, a couple weeks ago, you got that little thing on time management. You didn't try to get a copy of it. But so many things is actually based on time management and arranging our music priorities. You look at sometimes what time we do have and what we do with it. Or if there are cases where we can be able to do more than one thing at the same time, we're more focused. Then other situations where our health or our job just doesn't allow us at a certain time period that we can do very much. But then the question is, we should do what we can. I mean, there's enough of us that we could be able to divide services so that nobody is overly worked where too much is pressure. And there's enough things happening where everyone should be able to find something that they can do. Now that brings a whole other different idea. So I'll take a chance to harp on it. Another thing is that because we're constantly talking about expansion, there's always increasing things to do. If you notice, from month to month, there's actually increasing things to do. So we have increasing things to do, basically the same number of people. See, and that's always going to be a problem. So then it gets to be kind of an overload. We're always talking about expansion. Now here we're talking about expansion today from deeper inner experience. We're always talking about expansion. So then, how we do that without strain? That means that there should also be more ways to try to involve more people. But like now I'm a little bit frustrated because, you know, I have about six or so mothers who really, and even some of you, who really need a husband. And the difficulty is that we're not making enough men. And so when there's actually more men and more women, then there'll also be a natural arrangement that, you know, people will find partners who they feel most comfortable with, you know. And, you know, especially some, you know, that's there, because in some people's life, if there was a spiritual partner, that many things would be more tolerable, that they would be more happier with life in general, and would hopefully be able to enhance their spiritual life. You say hopefully because sometimes you learn through also the conflicts that come from having a partner. after a few months and happy ever after stuff begin to fade into the oblivion, you start wondering, what? Every little thing. Why are you snowing? Why are you dressed like this? Why are you doing this? Why are you not ready? Why are you competing with me all the time? You know. But at least the mind becomes occupied in another way also. But hopefully, you know, we will have a strong enough community where we will be able to honestly work out certain, as we're saying, passions and areas that we are having some personality conflicts. And if we're honest enough, then we can improve on those areas. And then we can offer more and see to each other. You know. I mean, you know, in certain cases. I mean, practically, 90% of you have problems. It's all related to those areas. It's all a sex problem. It's a gender problem. Yeah. I mean, almost, you know, there's some of you, every time we don't see it for a long time, we realize, okay, it's a problem. And there's so much to do, you know, do with that. You can look at each other and you can see, when you go around, you can see that there's a need. Especially with some of our younger devotees also. You know, I mean, your passions never settle down. But, you know, when you're about 25 years old, so maybe some of you forgot, it's been a long time. You're 25 years old, I mean, your passions are high. Happy 42, 45. especially with women, because when you hit 40, 45 years old, you start feeling some of the passions of a 22-year-old girl again. You know, so you're feeling that, don't be disturbed, it's natural, you know. But because, you know, life is changing, going through different changes. So, for assisting with the services, assisting with the work, and just for increasing our family, we need to be constantly, you know, bringing more people into association. Especially, we need to have more men, because we have so many women, wonderful mothers, who, if not find a spiritual mate, then after a while, they will be captivated by a materialistic relationship, where there's no Krishna, and then the spiritual life will be so much hurt. So maybe you guys should start having some men's meetings, find some ways how to, you know, be able to recruit some more men. A lot of it's just a matter of people also talking and sharing when they have the opportunities. Any other questions?
I wanted to get back to that issue of anger. And recently I've experienced a situation where the anger was such that the resulting actions affected so many other people and inconvenience, you know, them. And I was wondering, you know, it was almost like a ripple effect by just the, you know, that perhaps one act of anger in terms of them making certain decisions that impacted, you know, on other people. And I was wondering, at what point do we make this, rather than just speaking to that person, make it a community development issue or bring it to the attention of the community as a whole?
Yeah, that's one of the main purposes of community building sessions, is to be like a think tank and an energizing aspect of being able to tune in, you know, the issues a little more. So we think it's good that you can bring up those kind of things in the community building meetings. But we can try to be more sensitive for what things we need to focus more on, what things we need to, you know, bring more healing. So there's definitely. Otherwise, undercurrents there, and the undercurrent causes whoever it affects, you know, to suffer.
How do we encourage people to come because of that, to talk about it? Because some people have stopped coming because of something that they feel went wrong or they don't like. And that, then they're carrying that, you know, and talking about it behind. How do you encourage them to come and know?
Then there's two ways. One way you encourage them is you just encourage them, you invite them. And another way, if they're putting not to come because of their schedule or lack of interest or because of their priorities or whatever, then this is where it should be the duty of the three of you, yourself, Jagannath, Mahavacharya, then to call someone and to be able to talk with them. We should never be disturbed about communication and talk. I mean, if we can't get past that, then, you know, then we're kind of joking, you know, with the whole process. Vaishnava is always eager to see how to grow. And that's why we're here. I don't know how to grow, how to advance, how to excel. We always want to be concerned about whatever we say or do and how it affects others.
I was just I was thinking about your talk this morning when you were from the reading of the Gita, and relating it to the talk we're having now, I was recognizing that in my own experience, these transitions from work to here to home and so forth, I can make very easily if I'm chanting well, if I'm allowing, praying well, and in everything, in every activity, the deities I'm noticing, if I don't learn to clear my emotions very quickly, I can do my service, but there's no heart in it. Mm. Or if I'm interacting with the devotees, if I haven't cleared my emotions, I can't connect at a deep heart level. If I go home and carry my cab driving experience with me, mm. and haven't cleared the anger or the frustration, partly that I picked up from having, you know, 20 different kinds of angry people coming at me during the day, mm. and I can come home and not relate, but have all that charge behind it and create further tension. So one of the things I want to do, on the other hand, I was thinking, wow, what an opportunity we have to develop workshops mm-hmm. where we can use the skills we've developed going from these different environments and explain and give people the technology to clear their emotions so they can amplify their energy in a group, so we can develop a deeper sense of community. And we have the professionals who are going from groups in different environments, and always are trying to remain Krishna conscious in each environment they move. And you know, the one element that we have that is common to us that we carry with us in every environment is Krishna. And how can we bring that in to help us clear our emotions and amplify the energy wherever we move?
It seems that it may be healthy. As a matter of fact, I was thinking after the psychic fair of several new designs of ways how we can go into this new chapter and be able to do it in a very, very healthy sense. So I'll save those things until the psychic fair is over, because we need to do, you know, some regrouping in some areas.
Srila Krishna Prabhupada, as Leela Anantan Prabhu was speaking, I was just thinking about it this way. Is it possible to have developed sessions whereby we should learn how to speak to each other? Mm-hmm. You know, as Vaishnavas, even it's said that Krishna is so, you know, he speaks so wonderfully that even to his enemies, when he's speaking, he's like speaking very sweetly. And quality of a great soul, you can see from the way they talk to each other, even to an enemy. Prabhupada would talk to somebody, even abusing the person, and the person would be laughing, and, you know, because he's accepted. So how, if possible, like Leela and some people who have this ability, you know, we can sit us all together. It's a class session. Given how to talk to each other, how we can communicate, you know, that would be very, very interesting. Because I see one of the problems that is jarring us, family and everything, is that we don't even know how to speak to each other. You may be wanting to say the right thing, but the way of communication is very wrong. So if we can sit down and then have that class among ourselves, well, then we can carry it to our, into our community.
Unequivocally, this is part of what we want to focus on after next month. Is not only the idea of maybe get started home first. We're talking about more workshops, more seminars, more devotees doing more things as outreach. And so, in order to do that effectively, we have to be able to do amongst ourselves better. And so we need to have more emphasis about, you know, from the body developing communication skills. Bodies themselves understanding how to deal with conflict a little better. Bodies themselves understanding a little bit more about, you know, as we say, anger and stress, and how to, you know, avoid it before it comes and how to deal with it, you know, when it's there. So, yeah, this is definitely what we should get ready for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mati, just kind of echoing my sentiments, I was just seeing a need for more internal work amongst ourselves before we take something that we ourselves are not imbibing into the community. So he expressed very eloquently what I wanted to mention. And then just some critical issues, I think, that are surfacing. Well, that probably has been present for a while within the community that just doesn't seem to be addressed. And because, you know, my association is fairly new, I'm always asking, well, how are these issues being dealt with? How do you address them as a community? Is there anything in place by which, you know, these issues can be addressed? And it seems to be, you know, everyone deal with, you know, a particular thing in an isolated kind of way, and it's not really being effectively addressed. And so it persists. Not only does it persist, but it, you know, it grows. You know, so that would be good.
I was going to say that when the community building group first started, that was one of the main things, was to improve communication skills. And we did have a few at Mariata's house. We had a few exercises, and where people did diet sharing, and they tried to develop their listening skills and their speaking skills. And we were kind of doing that, and then it was kind of evolving into like a support group. And there was a feeling that we weren't, the services that we were rendering weren't quality. So what the thrust was, we need to improve the quality of our services. So the community building group became more task-oriented. And now I see that it's kind of like, it's almost, in some aspects, too task-oriented. And what we seem to have, or at least I seem to have difficulty, like I love the community building group because the analogy for me is like we're all these dirty potatoes and we're in this barrel, and in the community building group we all get shaken up, and so we come out clean, you know, we get purified. But some people, like, you know, just jump out of the barrel because it's too much. Because I find for me, often my ego, I have an agenda, and it's very hard for me to let go of it. And what I find in the community building group is kind of my thing echoed. It's hard to reach consensus. And it seems like to reach consensus may take more time, because we may need to hear from everyone. And right now, because we have other services that we're trying to facilitate, it's hard for us to do that.
I've been making an observation that based on the scripture where a devotee should have certain kind of etiquette to other devotees, I find that, not just here, it's just one or two situations I see, but I've made this observation in other places, that some people come in and they look at the scripture, and because devotees are supposed to be compassionate and kind and whatever, some people come in with certain dominating and controlling moods and cheating moods and get away with it because everybody is kind of considering how not to commit an offense. And then those persons get a chance to come and wreak havoc or give a bad name to the guru or the temple or whatever. And that's something I was having a problem with. And I mentioned it, I think, to Jagannath, that what are we going to do when people see a way to, you know, people can use loopholes, as we call it, and wreak havoc in a community, and everybody is kind of light-footing it around them because everybody's worrying about, you know, the more intense the person is in their behavior, everybody finds, oh, some other way to duck the issue of dealing with it. So I was wondering what would happen if we were in a community and a really horrendous situation is getting ready to happen or is happening, what will people do? Because we're not doing it now, you know, facing the issue. Or if you try to say, you know, I don't like this behavior, or I'm not very trusting of this person's some behavior, but I like that. Some people have a dominating energy that can make things happen, which is good, but then you're wondering about trusting them beyond a certain point. And then other people attack you because you have some feelings about it. So it's just like, where do we go from here? And then you start backing up, and I mean, what's going to happen if we have a community?
Being contradicted. Being compassionate means, you know, being foolish. Or it's not that when you develop better communication skills, then you just become tolerant toward everything. But, you know, it means you become sharper also about, you know, qualifying the situation. You become more able to confront people based on what seems to be the situation, but it can be done tactfully, but straightforward.
Yeah, no, it doesn't mean that by the fact of emphasizing more compassion, then people can come into the environment and just try to exploit the devotees or exploit the kindness. No, kindness means that you're concerned about you know, how to help somebody. Somebody who's exploited. Kindness is that you help protect that person from being exploited. You know, otherwise you're doing the person injustice by giving them more ammunition to exploit.
But then I think we all have to learn that when you try to do, maybe that's a test for me or others who are having the same feeling, when you try to make that change, other devotees are attacking you, you know, and thinking you're being the negative. You see what I'm saying? And then everybody backs up because I guess you want to look good or be treated, you know, in a certain way. So
well,
I find that's
simple
the problem.
Things. We're going to see whether we are negative. But we do have to be ready to honor the sentiment of so many devotees who we are with. The idea is that we have some intention, and so many devotees are feeling that intention is not so healthy. So we have to take a closer look at ourselves. That's why we're in the group here. We may still be right, we may be wrong. But if we have some intention, so many devotees are feeling this seems off, so we discuss and see, take a closer look to see if we are off or if we are not communicating based on what a feeling that is not being expressed. So we don't want to hold the voice too long. There's less person.
One small thing, you raised in the class earlier, but in terms of what some devotees are sharing, in terms of some of the dynamics that are going on, one thing, we had a Brahmin meeting a couple of weeks ago, and one of the issues we were speaking about was the fact of how we can help to increase enthusiasm so that more people can be involved. Because I've seen one of the dynamics that's occurring is that some of the arms or structures of the Institute that could resolve some of the issues are not so functional because there's, one, laziness and lack of compassion on the part of myself and a lot of people who are involved in activities. But some of it is also that there's a unit of people who are engaged in a lot of different activities in different areas, so that there's not enough proper focus in terms of making some of the other arms work. So for example, there's a men's group and a women's group and a grihastha group and a parenting group and a counseling group, and those arms are very weak. So people are looking to the social development meetings on Thursday to resolve so many issues. And so people have social needs to share and talk and to, you know, meet with the men, women and meet with the men. Their parents have issues. But whenever the issue comes up, people look to the Thursday night group meeting to resolve it. And there's been an agenda and a focus that is task-oriented, service-oriented, but people don't have outlets to deal with their other issues because those other arms aren't so much functioning. So one, I know for particularly the counseling group, Bila and I, if we were more focused in terms of having that be a strong arm of the Institute, some of the issues could get dovetailed into the counseling group as opposed to the social the Thursday night group, and they could maybe be able to dealt with before they need to go into there, or they could just be brought in there in a way to let the community know instead of going back and forth on issues. So that's one thing that we're trying to grapple with in terms of how to pull in people more to help support some of the other arms because they're not really operating. And the other thing I want to thank you about is the distinction you made about the difference between what someone does versus who they are. And that was very helpful to me because I think about that in terms of parenting. I always say that in parenting, when your child does something, you make that distinction. But I was thinking when, you know, we're in a situation, we have to give guidance to someone or talk to someone about something. By thinking of that, making a distinction between what they're doing and who they are and the spirit soul, that can help us to be more compassionate and less sentimental because we'll be thinking to say what that person needs versus, you know, the person will be upset. And then I was thinking, in applying that same thing you were saying, when you receive instruction, to not personalize it. Because when you're thinking, this person's saying something, and that means that I'm a bad person, you personalize it. It can make you not want to hear or to keep away or to resist. But when you're thinking, oh, this person may be talking about what I do, because my mother Indrani gets me on that a lot. I'll come to her with something someone said to me, and she'll say, they're not doing anything to you. You're the soul can't be cut. And she starts quoting Bhagavad Gita, and it helps me to separate those two things. And the last point I wanted to make is I was seeing in terms of my job, when I first started the job, I had to watch, even though sometimes we can be in jobs that are molded, there can be subtle sense gratification there. So we kind of don't like it, and it's kind of heavy, but we kind of like it, and then it gives us an outlet to deal with some like subtle passion type of things. So to kind of watch also those things I saw in myself.
If we know something is not proper, we kind of settle in and we sort of enjoy it. We're taking away more than we have to take away. Okay, last thing is that the social and personality dynamics are definitely important. for two things. One, there'll always be some problems because it's like, you know, putting many yogis together, ascetics together, and sometimes past demigods together, who are, as one or two you mentioned, the controllers. And so there's always that control energy that'll be there. Also, Krishna arranged it for devotees to purify each other. And so Krishna himself and Guru himself, some of the problems you have, Guru is also even sending those. Sometimes we are having certain problems that are actually part of our growth, but they come out in a certain way, in interpersonal, you know, conflicts. So that's there. The other thing is that we're not going to very, very, very significantly address these kind of things until we become more Krishna conscious. I mean, these things we're doing, we have to do, but really it's secondary in this patch-up until we become more Krishna conscious. When you become more Krishna conscious, you're automatically going to become more aware of what you do, what you say, and how it affects someone else. You're automatically going to become more aware of someone else's pain. You're not become more aware of trying to speak to someone in a way that would be pleasing to Guru and Krishna. You automatically be trying to see how you use your time. You'll be more honest about what things you can do, what things you can't do, and you know what you can do, you try to do to the best that you can. So don't think that we're just gonna have a lot of workshops, it's gonna solve everything, it's gonna be smooth. Because in some cases it's gonna bring out more stuff. Mm-hmm. It's no use to, you know, hide on the stuff. It's gonna bring out more stuff, need to clean stuff to be able to move on. But we should be able to do this and know this because there's such a need in general. And if we can get a better whole handle on ourselves, then how many other people we can help? It's like the whole discussion about anger. So many people have no ways of how to channel that anger. And those who have this spiritual connection, they should be more at the forefront in trying to help themselves first, to be able to help others. And it kind of goes hand in hand. As you're recognizing your own stuff and you really try to help improve on that, and then as you try to deal with what you're learning to assist others, it makes your own thing stronger also. Not that you have to become perfect before you can really help somebody else. But if you're not honest with yourself and really helping yourself, then when you help someone else, it's just going to be all cosmetic. Because then it's all theory. As Mantra was saying, so with people who talk about love, talk about compassion, but then why so much harshness? And some of that, I mean, there's a certain percentage of that that is Krishna and Guru arranging for devotees to have to be confronted and address certain issues about themselves by some of the, you know, interactions. There's no accident about it. The kind of associations that you have with each other, that's out there. But we work on these things, we work on systems, we work on workshops, we work on ways to address some of these issues, and ways to bring spiritual solutions to material problems. But the real issue is how much we're becoming more Krishna conscious. And that deals with my previous discussion about going deeper in what we do have. If we do that, you'll see certain things. I mean, some of you, you know, I don't want to flatter you, but some of you have changed so much that it's like a different person already. And you still got stuff. But from what you brought in, when you first started chanting Hare Krishna, and what you, through how you think, how you serve, how you interact now, it's like a big difference. Sometimes you have to look at each other a little closer and see through some of the good sides, and then it'll help you even encourage someone you have a problem with to bring out more of their good side. But I can see, because, you know, I can see, some of you have changed so much that some of your problems is because you're moving faster than you realize. There's a part of you trying to hold on to some stuff that you've really gradually given up. But because you're used to holding on to that, you're still holding on to it. But in general, many of you have changed a whole lot. We are putting pressure on the environment, and so there's a lot of stuff that keeps coming up. If it's not dealt with, it'll keep coming up and it'll frustrate you. You see, every time we, you know, go and come and come and go, talk about new chapters, we're actually putting pressure on the environment. And so it'll cause you to feel some incoherence if you're not moving. And it'll cause some people to to even move to the sideline if they're not being more stricter. And some of it will cause some confusion, and others it will cause some inner anticipation and eagerness according to what level of modes is actually, you know, bothering you. So we're talking about new chapters and new chapters. And so it's not an accident that you're beginning to think more about where we're stagnant, what we have to do, like Krishna doing that. Another question is, how much are we going to take all of this and look at ourselves? But it starts with yourself first. You see, okay? Why is it that Krishna keeps bringing this thing to me? Why is it that Krishna keeps helping me have this problem, this kind of personality problem? Why is it that I'm feeling lonely this way, or having this thing, or having this anger, or whatever? Then we work on that. Then each individual makes up the environment. Then there'll be a difference, you know, in the environment. So we'll be having more strategy on some practical things to assist with some of the interactions. There'll be less tension in that way and more clarity. And then we'll have more clarity about the kind of areas we can be able to move in. And it's going to have a lot to do with each devotee being able to be more as guru. Because you all have more potential than you think you have. You all can be able to access more sense of divinity than you're having right now. And as you do access more, and Krishna will use you more. We are having some thing that we'll present to you later about how each of you, we want you to take on more of a mood of guru and to have certain types of projects where you can take more care of people's lives. See, some of you were able to be involved in helping to help others, and you notice some of your own problems will also come to the side because you get a lot of realization from that. And you get certain potencies also, certain strength. Otherwise, there would be too much inner energy amongst the devotees that will be directed toward each other. And Maya will try to enhance that. You know. But you're doing, you know, I mean, some of you are, everybody's different. But remember the initial thing, that don't just chant, don't just see the deity, don't just read, but read and try to go deeper. And what is the essence of this that I'm reading? Chant and try to go deeper into, I'm actually calling God's name. I actually have a fact line with the Supreme. See the deity, try to realize, even though I don't see and I don't fully understand, but really, Krishna's there in the deity. And Krishna is available. And the last thing we ask you to do is, I mean, you know, make sure nobody's around, not around, but you start communicating more, start talking more to the spiritual master. You know, something's on your mind, you talk, you want to make some prayer. Maybe Sunday speak about prayer. But start actually communicating more in the mindset that here I have some desire to serve better. I have this problem, this thing, that thing going on in my life. And, you know, communicate. Your picture. The Murti. It's like I can, you know, I see Prabhupada and the Murti. And when a lot of people are not around, let's talk. Why not? It's not just statue. Well, we think that it's statue, the more it will act like statue to us. To the degree that we realize that Guru is in the Murti, Guru is in the picture, because Krishna is there. Krishna is in, because Krishna is in everyone's heart. And Krishna is a common factor that runs through all things. So there's never a time that Krishna is not attentive. So therefore, as we try to connect, then we are connecting Krishna in our heart, connecting with the Krishna in the heart of where we're connecting. So there's no problem for Krishna, because Krishna is there. So if we are a little more accountable in that way, a little more personal, and we also begin to move above, beyond just the, which are the externals. Because there's a lot of work in the Institute. A lot of, you know, projects and things like that that sometimes happen, sometimes don't happen. So we have to be careful that we don't become the people who work a lot, but somehow are not developing a rich culture of devotion. And that's why we have to look at when we do all these workshops and things too, that we don't begin to operate on each other's, you know, social and psychological aspects to the point that we're not developing more of the heart and devotion. When you do that, the other things will be easier. And when we're not doing it, we have to do more of the outside to hopefully bring out the inside, to make it easier to bring out the outside. We're going to do more of the workshops and things to help make it a easier atmosphere to bring out the devotion. But it's devotion that is the key thing. Just. His God found the job, his divine grace, easy, bhakti, vidanta, swami, kirupa, ki.